Hello everyone, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom, your window on the world. Today we are studying our Newsworthy Clips article for this month. We are on page 26 of our Advanced magazine. But before we get into our article, I would love to introduce our panel for today. We've got some great people here in this studio. First, my name is Campbell, and to my left, I have Gordon.
Hello everyone, I hope you're all feeling very well today.
It's great to have you, Gordon. You always have some great insight on our articles.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here and to look at this article. We're going to be here for the next few days.
All right. And across from me, we have a very handsome man, Albert. Hello, Albert.
Hello, everyone. So glad you can join us. I'm super excited about this team composition of panelists that we have here.
Yes, right. It's going to be a great 3 days with this newsworthy clip. And to my right, we have a very lovely lady. Hello, Carolyn.
Hello, Campbell, and hello, everyone. Yes, I feel very honored to be here as the only woman in the room.
Well, I am sure you are the voice of reason for our articles, these three. Okay, so today we are talking about genetic engineering. Do you guys know anything about genetic engineering?
I always think of like science fiction work and some dark stories we might see in movies when I think of genetic engineering, like humans having too much power and controlling nature and biology.
Right. What do you think of when you think of genetic engineering, Albert?
Same thing like Gordon. This summer, 2016, something goes wrong.
Right. So genetic engineering is pretty much just a scientific process where you are playing around with genes, right? We know that all living beings have genes, DNA, and it's kind of like Jurassic Park, you know, like what you're talking about, where you kind of manipulate genes to create a different species of plant or a species of animal or even human.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned plants because this sounds like science fiction and like the future, but it's been happening for years. You know, farmers do this. They have different kinds of plants and genes spliced, and then you have like new bananas that are easier to grow so you can feed cities and countries.
So genetically modified organisms or plants or animals are actually not that uncommon, especially in, I guess, globalized food production, right? Corn is often genetically modified so that it's hardier, and wheat as well. So there are many, many genetically modified things that probably make up part of your daily life. You may not realize that.
Right. And in some cases, people think negatively about genetically modified things, right? I think in certain organic stores, they often talk about non-GMO, right? Non-genetically modified products. But in this case, we are talking about genetic engineering and how it is helpful and how it has been used to help society. All right, so let's get into day one of our newsworthy clips. We are on page 26 of our Advanced magazine, so if you have your magazine or your mobile device, please do open up to this article and join us at the top of page 26.
Genetic Engineering's New Frontier. Genetic engineering on a planetary scale used to be the stuff of science fiction dreams and sometimes nightmares, but now the potential has arrived. For the first time, discussions about quickly transforming entire ecosystems on a large scale are no longer hypothetical. Scientists from the University of California, San Diego, and the University of California, Irvine, announced that they had genetically engineered a breed of mosquito that not only blocks infection by malaria parasites, but can quickly spread its anti-malarial genes throughout its species. In some areas, a single season might be enough to change the population. Since malaria kills hundreds of thousands of people annually, the potential benefit is obvious. Other mosquito-borne diseases could possibly be controlled in this fashion as well.
All right, so today we are talking about genetic engineering's new frontier. What do you think of when you think of the word new frontier?
Well, it's an area that hasn't been explored yet. So they're going to research or go to a place that no one else has been or researched before.
Mm-hmm. Right. So when we think of new frontier, we think of a place that is not tamed. It's not been explored before. You can have a physical frontier, or in this case, it's kind of an area of science that has not maybe been as developed. I often think of Star Trek, you know, the final frontier, right? The newest place to be explored. So we are entering a new frontier with genetic engineering. How do we start our article here? It says genetic engineering on a planetary scale used to be what?
Well, it used to be stuff of science fiction, like I'd begun today's radio show talking about. Mm-hmm. So science fiction dreams and sometimes nightmares, as both Albert and I alluded to.
Right. So sometimes, you know, if you think of Frankenstein, right? Dr. Mm-hmm. Frankenstein, or different things like that, horror films, where, or even Jurassic Park, where, you know, genetically modified, genetically engineered animals start wreaking havoc and causing problems.
Right.
So it used to be, on a planetary scale, it used to be science fiction dreams. Now, what are we talking about when we're talking about something on a planetary scale?
Something that's on a planetary scale is relating to or affecting the Earth as a planet. So it's on a global scale that's going to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could say a universal scale. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Star Trek,
right?
So it's kind of dealing with space, right? That idea of science fiction and things that are outside the realm of what we would consider to be possibilities.
Right. So what it's saying is that in the past, overall, in most of the world, genetic engineering was fiction. It was something that people thought of in their minds. But now it's becoming more and more reality, right? More and more of a reality. And it's saying that for the first time, what's going on now for the first time?
And now science is talking about transforming entire ecosystems. So transforming is changing, adapting, using these genetic engineering processes. And by ecosystem, we mean the living system, the living environment of any particular area.
Right. So the plants, the animals, the humans that are all living in a certain area. This is the ecosystem. All right. And they're talking about using genetic engineering to transform or change the entire ecosystem on a large scale. And this is no longer hypothetical.
Right, which means it's now possible. It's not just a theory or an idea that someone has had. It's not hypothetical that you just discuss, but you don't actually do. It's now possible.
Right, so it's reality now. All right, so we hear about some scientists from the University of California in San Diego and the University of California in Irvine. What did they announce? What did they actually do?
That there is a breed of mosquitoes that not only blocks infection by malaria parasites, but I've also read about this a little bit where, like, they're engineering mosquitoes where they can't reproduce.
Mm. So I don't know about you, but I hate mosquitoes. We get a lot of mosquitoes where we live. In Asia, and in our house, for some reason, we have tons and tons of mosquitoes. Last night, I must have zapped about 10 of them in my living room. But here they're actually creating mosquitoes, right? Creating mosquitoes that are actually beneficial.
Right. So malaria is a very serious disease mm-hmm. in many tropical parts of the world, mm-hmm. and it spreads very quickly and is quite deadly without treatment. Mm-hmm. And so if they can create mosquitoes that don't spread malaria, they block that infection from being transmitted, then that is definitely beneficial to the people and animals that live in regions affected by malaria.
Right. That's true. And, you know, in tropical areas, there are a lot of mosquitoes in places where it's moist and hot. And a lot of times mosquitoes, because they suck people's blood, they can transfer the germs and the bacteria from person to person, animal to animal, and cause a lot of problems. And so, as Carolyn was saying, these new genetically engineered breed of mosquitoes, they not only stop the spread of malaria, they also are able to spread anti-malarial genes, so kind of be the antidote for malaria and be a cure.
Right. So if they're spreading anti-malarial genes, that kind of gives me the impression that when these mosquitoes breed with other mosquitoes, the eggs that are then laid by the female mosquitoes will have these same anti-malarial properties and will not spread the disease in the future.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost like the mosquitoes themselves become doctors and they go around inoculating or vaccinating people and animals.
Yeah, so the whole population of mosquitoes in the future might be just not have this malarial problem of spreading malaria around people. And this really is one of the big problems for modern humanity. We have like a certain number of diseases, and malaria kills millions of people, I think, every year.
Mm.
And there are countries that they really struggled with how to deal with this. I know in the United States, they I think they bomb swamps with like chemicals to kill the mosquitoes that spread the malaria. And we have like malaria mosquito nets that are spread around.
Yep.
So although this might sound scary doing genetic engineering, actually like altering some of the mosquitoes and slightly changing the population may be less harmful for the environment than some of the current measures we have just to keep the population down.
It's true. And I mean, it's not just malaria. There are plenty of other diseases that are spread by mosquitoes. I know earlier this year, just in the Caribbean, there is a virus that was being spread around by mosquitoes, and I had some friends that took a cruise out there, and they were warned, you know, to be careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a problem, and so now they're able to create these mosquitoes that will kind of inoculate the situation, which is great. We do see some statistics here. It says malaria kills hundreds of thousands of people annually, so that's a huge problem. So we see that the potential benefit is obvious. And as we were saying, other mosquito-borne diseases could possibly be controlled in this fashion as well. So it sounds like some good things are coming out of this genetic engineering. What do you guys think about this, about what they're doing out in California?
I think it's pretty amazing. Like, as I've said, malaria is a massive problem and other diseases spread by mosquitoes. It amuses me that you started by saying, I really dislike mosquitoes, and I'm sure, like me, you hate them because you get bitten.
Right.
Now, this wouldn't actually solve that problem. Right? There'd still be mosquitoes, and we'd still get bitten by them.
Right.
But we wouldn't have to worry when we get bitten that we were going to be getting diseases, which would be deadly.
That's true. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see what else they're doing with this genetic engineering. Let's continue our article in the second column of page 26.
There's a vast potential to easily introduce desirable changes in other wild species, along with farm animals and cultivated plants. One could imagine algae engineered to grow more prolifically as a source of biofuel. Disease-resistant cattle, the list is endless. But worries about pitfalls and mistakes are also widespread. Lessons from previous ecological disruptions resonate in the minds of scientists and bioethicists. Unintended havoc is sometimes caused when people wittingly or unwittingly transplant a species into an environment it's not native to. Without natural predators, the invasive species can run wild and produce undesired effects. The scientists say they recognize the potential pitfalls and are keeping their work safeguarded in the laboratory. With the impending arrival of this technology and the potential to use it outside the lab, genetic engineering experts, led by George Church of Harvard Medical School, wrote a cautionary commentary in the journal Science. The commentary warned of potential dangers and urged strict precautions.
All right, so we have some interesting thoughts here. It's kind of the flip side of what we were just talking about. But before we get into that, let's talk about the vast potential, right? So they see a vast potential in this genetic engineering, right? What are some of the things that they see that they can do?
Well, they can in turn boost production for stock, livestock with animals or plants, you know, from things that Carolyn mentioned earlier in the show, like corn and wheat,
Right. So they're finding that, you know, this genetic engineering can create produce and animals and livestock that are resistant to disease, which is, you know, in theory is a good thing, because then there's more food and there's more animals to get things done, right? They talk about algae, which is really interesting. Algae engineered to grow more prolifically as a source of biofuel. All right. First, what does it mean for something to grow more prolifically?
It means something that's producing in abundance, mm-hmm. Producing much of, plentiful.
Right. Yes. All right. And we have a source of biofuel. So there's two words here, bio and fuel, kind of fused together. When we talk about bio, we're talking about something dealing with life, and fuel, things that give other things energy, right? We talk about fossil fuels like gas and gasoline and, I don't know,
coal.
Coal. Yeah. Water sometimes.
Kind of a coal,
all right?
Area.
Yeah. So biofuel, though, it's living things that create energy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So rather than burning coal or burning oil, we burn these biofuel things.
Right. So algae can be a source of energy. They've done a lot of studies on how to harness the energy from algae to power vehicles, to power plants, like production plants. When I say plants, not things
factories.
That you eat, not things that you grow. Yeah, the factories. So algae actually has a lot of interesting uses for biofuel potential.
Right. So being able to create more of this algae might be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have disease-resistant cattle, which just means that these cattle don't get sick.
Yeah, you can see that being useful. If a disease spread through your farm, you might lose half of your cows, half your cattle, or whatever else you're raising, and that's going to affect your business, going to affect the amount of food available.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the list is endless. So there's a lot that they're doing with genetic engineering. We see a sidebar here. They have used genetic engineering in medicine. Albert, can you read that for us?
Yes. Examples of genetic engineering in medicine. The insulin used by diabetics is made in bacteria that have been given a gene that codes for making insulin. An entire class of drugs, monoclonal antibodies, is produced from genetically engineered cells in what is now a standard part of the pharmaceutical industry.
All right, so we do see that they are using genetic engineering in medicine to create different types of medicine that help people and improve their lives. So again, this is not so much science fiction anymore, right? It's becoming more and more of a part of our daily lives, and a lot of times we don't even realize it. Right.
All this good stuff. There must be a catch.
Well, yeah, that's what we're getting into, right? So we do have some people that are worried about some pitfalls and mistakes.
Right. So a pitfall, you can see that in your vocabulary focus, a likely mistake or problem in a situation. So it's kind of the downside to whatever you happen to be doing, the pitfall.
Right. So there are a lot of people that are concerned about messing with nature and messing with genes, right? Mm. And there are some lessons from previous ecological disruptions, and these resonate in the minds of scientists and bioethicists. So there have been problems and mistakes that have happened in the past, and scientists and bioethicists are very aware of these, and when we talk about genetic engineering, they're a little concerned.
Yeah, humans have spread out all over the world, and long before we had the technology to engineer at a genetic level, we put animals on our ships and plants and carried them all over the world, and some countries, as you can see in your sidebar at the very bottom of page 26, have been radically affected by humans just bringing different animals and different plants over the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as Gordon was saying, in the sidebar of page 26, we see an example of something that can go wrong. The spread of Africanized bees in North America, snakes in Guam, and rabbits in Australia all provide examples of irreparable harm from introduced species. So all these different animals and insects, they were not native to these places, but for some reason they got brought over and they caused a lot of problems.
Right. Usually it was seen as a solution to an existing problem,
right?
It's like, okay, we're going to bring in these animals, like snakes, so that they can eat rats,
right?
Something like that. Or we're going to bring in rats because they can eat these bugs,
right? Mm.
But then they eat other things too,
right?
And it causes a lot of problems in that local ecosystem,
right? So, for those of the people that have traveled internationally, you know they're very, very, very careful about what you can bring into the countries, right? You can't bring meat, you can't bring different, vegetable products, and so you need to, be careful about all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And many governments are very wary of you bringing things inadvertently into their country.
And even if you have a pet that you want to bring with you, say you're moving to another country, that pet will have to be quarantined,
mm-hmm,
because they want to make sure that there are no diseases that might enter their country through your beloved animal.
That's right. So, for example, rabies is very common in the States, but not so much common here in Asia. So if you're bringing a dog over from America to Asia, they're going to be in quarantine for a couple of weeks, which is hard. All right. So, okay, let's take a look at this word bioethicist. So first of all, again, there's the prefix bio again, so dealing with life and biology, right? What is who are ethicists?
So, an ethicist is a type of moral philosopher, so someone who's in the field of philosophy, and here particularly with bioethics, we have someone who studies ethical issues and moral issues that come from medical research and biological research.
Right. So when we talk about ethics, we're talking about the right things to do and right wrong things to do, you know, and for example, experimenting on humans, is that ethical, right? Is that something that is good to be doing, right? So bioethicists, they are very concerned about things like this, all right? And one of the things they're concerned about is unintended havoc that is sometimes caused when people unwittingly or unwittingly transplant a species into an environment it's not native to. And we talked a little bit about that earlier. What does this word havoc mean?
Havoc is like the confusion and lack of order, especially causing damage or trouble. So, you know, sometimes an animal has had decades or centuries to get comfortable in its surrounding and it knows its environment. But sometimes when you transfer it to another country, like we talked about, it just wreaks havoc because maybe it becomes the big dog in a sense, where mm-hmm, it's the top predator in that area, and mm-hmm, it wipes out other things, other animals, and even if though the people who brought it there had good intentions, you can't really control for all variables and factors.
Right. So it talks about the natural predators, and Carolyn touched on this a little bit earlier. It's just sometimes animals or insects are brought into a place to solve a problem, but then it ends up creating a bigger problem because there's nothing to keep those animals in check.
Right. I mean, like, you know, we can see a snake or a mouse, right? And yet we are not able to control that. Imagine on a microscopic level where we're dealing with genetics,
mm-hmm,
and we have to factor for those things. So mm-hmm, it does kind of seem like it would get out of hand,
right,
quickly.
Right. But scientists aren't completely unaware of these problems, right? They are aware and they do recognize the potential pitfalls, but what are they doing to make sure that things don't get out of hand?
Well, they have safeguards,
mm-hmm,
and a safeguard is just something that you set up to prevent bad things from happening, right? You see the word safe and guard.
Mm-hmm.
So they're keeping their work safeguarded in the laboratory. They're making sure that it doesn't just get out and wreak havoc on the local environment.
And I guess in the laboratory, they're going to do lots
in
of testing. Okay, so in Britain, listeners, we say laboratory.
Incorrectly.
No. Different.
No, it's just different. Laboratory. And in English, or in American.
American English.
He says the English. In American English, we say laboratory. All right, so just a little tidbit there for you. Okay, so what were you saying about the laboratory?
I was saying within this lab, there will be testing, and they'll test any new developments extensively these days, as Carolyn says, within the lab, so it's safe, and then they'll hopefully only use this in the actual world when they're sure about the results.
Right. But sometimes it can be hard because, honestly, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know that you don't know it. So sometimes you can't even predict. You know, you think it'd be okay, and then you do it, and then you realize, oh my goodness, huge problem.
It seems like a chance, like, it's almost like playing the lottery. I mean, like, we have these diseases nowadays, like AIDS, and it was just chance and chance and chance, and it just happened. It transferred from monkeys to humans. No one was able to foresee it, and nobody would thought it would be this rampant. But that's what happens when you play with chances, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so going back to mosquitoes, right, genetically engineering them, you think that, oh, okay, changing mosquitoes is not a big deal, but actually mosquitoes are a really important part of the food chain.
Yes.
There are other animals that eat mosquitoes, right. And so if you change the genetic material of the mosquito, that could then affect other animals in the food chain,
mm-hmm.
which are eaten by other animals, which eventually get to humans,
mm-hmm.
right? Because people eat other animals.
Right.
And so this could actually cause a chain reaction,
yep.
and have negative side effects. So they need to do a lot of testing before anything gets approved.
Right. And, I mean, that is basically what the genetic engineering experts led by George Church of Harvard Medical School are writing in their cautionary commentary in the Journal of Science. They're warning about the potential dangers and urge strict precautions, you know. So any change, anything you do can have immense ramifications. They can cause a lot of problems. And so we really need to be careful about when we change nature in some ways, right? All right. Well, we hope that you found today's article interesting. We'd love to hear your opinions about genetic engineering and if you think it's a good idea. So make sure you write to us at letters@studioclassroom.com and come back tomorrow for more newsworthy clips. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.